You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breininger, inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
Hi, I'm Allie Gertz.
And I'm Julia Prescott.
And this podcast is brought to you by
Everything's Coming Up Simpsons.
Make sure to tune in on September 11th.
We are talking about the episode Radio Bart with a special guest you may recognize.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. And actually, I'm Bart Simpson. Who the hell are you?
Ah!
We're so excited.
Oh, this is so good.
This was one of our favorite episodes we've ever done.
Mark your calendars. I don't know. You're probably already downloading it. What is this life?
September 11th, we are joined by, you already heard her, Nancy Cartwright. We're so excited. Please tune in.
All right. Bye.
Today's episode is brought to you by Last Rampage, the new true crime film starring Robert Patrick, Heather Graham, and Bruce Davison. And we had the pleasure of speaking to someone involved with the movie.
So my name is Alvaro Rodriguez. I'm the screenwriter for The Last Rampage. As a writer, to me, I'm less interested in genre and more interested in character. And, you know, I've written in a lot of different genres, kind of horror genre, thriller or action movie or kids movie or, you know, different kinds of things. And it was always more, I was always more interested in character and hadn't really quite done something like this before, but was just really drawn to this idea of a guy like Gary Tyson, who, you know, had been in and out of institutions from the time he was, you know, a kid, and having sort of raised three sons from behind bars, and how these three sons kind of grew up in the church of Gary and thinking that their father had been, you know, unjustly accused and unjustly convicted, and all of this stuff that they were getting fed from their mom, Dorothy, who's played in the film by Heather Graham. So to me, it was just, I was interested in telling that kind of a story, telling a family story. You know, to me, the most interesting stories are family centered in some way. You know, they're elemental stories. They're stories that go back to, you know, to the most intimate and elemental parts of ourselves. So the idea of fathers and sons, you know, there's a line in the script about, in the movie about that, you know, where Gary tells his oldest son, you know, Donnie, there's only one law you got to worry about, you know, and that's a law of fathers over sons. And the only way you're going to, you know, get past that is, you know, by this, you know, by dying, basically, but kind of threatens him a little bit. But so that was really, you know, the touchstone for me, trying to figure out how to tell that story.
Don't miss Last Rampage, the true story of the prison break of Gary Tyson. In theaters September 22nd and available for on-demand pre-order August 22nd. Find out more on Twitter by following @LastRampageFilm or on Facebook.com/LastRampageFilm.
Files. This is Kumail Nanjiani, your host. I'm very excited about this episode. Paul Scheer came on to talk about Dwayne Barry and Ascension. These are probably maybe my favorite two-parter in the entire run of the X-Files. Dwayne Barry is I mean, to me, both of these work together as one great movie, and it really sets the X-Files off in a direction that really pays off over the rest of the series. So, enjoy it. Go to Reddit. There's the X-Files Files subreddit. There's a lot of great conversation going on, so go there. Follow me at X-Files Files on my personal account, at Kumail N. My TV show, The Meltdown with Jonah and Kumail, is airing every Wednesday on Comedy Central. Another 4 weeks left. And tonight's episode actually has Weird Al Yankovic on it, which is really, really exciting. And he does something really cool. Really stoked that that happened. It's after At Midnight, 12:30 a.m. technically Thursday, but you know, I think it's also on demand. You can buy it on iTunes, but if you have Comedy Central, that's the easiest, cheapest way to watch it. And go rate and review the podcast on iTunes. That'll keep us, you know, that'll keep our rankings high, and that'll you know, ensure that we keep getting good guests. I just interviewed Glenn Morgan, and his episode will be coming out in a few more weeks, because we talk about some episodes that I want to review on the show before, you know, I actually have a conversation with him about it. And he was really, really fantastic, and I got some great insight into how the show sort of was developed and stuff. And I also talked to Kevin Smith, recorded that recently, and he's a massive X-Files fan. His dogs are named Mulder and Scully. Well, Scully passed away, but I met Mulder. And that was a really cool conversation as well, and I believe that'll come out next week. So thank you so much for listening, guys. Here's Paul Scheer. Hey, welcome to the X-Files Files. I'm Kumail Nanjiani. The guest today is Paul Scheer.
I'm very excited to be on the X-Files Files. this is a show that, you know, and I think you didn't even believe me when I said that it was a show that I really liked. You had a, you seemed to be suspect.
I was a little suspicious.
Why?
I don't know why. No, because honestly, dude, since I started this show,
yeah,
I find, you know, I'm surprised at how there aren't as many people who were crazy into it as I thought there'd be. I thought everybody my age would be super into the show.
Yeah.
It's not everybody.
Well, you see, like, Buffy, X-Files, like, they all were in, like, a zone for me of, like I was... I just felt like these were my shows, these hour-long yeah. shows that were cool and interesting. And actually, I was telling you this the other day, but I did a college paper on the X-Files.
Yeah, what was your college paper? Okay.
So I went to NYU.
That's a first, by the way, on yeah. this podcast.
I'm very excited to share it with you because it's a crazy thing. I just remembered it the other day. I went to NYU and I took, I took a Native American art class, okay, which was me just basically trying to ace something. Like, yes. I was like, oh, this will be easy.
Yeah.
Little did I know, it was harder than any class I could have possibly taken, looking at Native American art, like, in depth. And it was like, I was flailing in this class, just not doing well with knowing, like, the Hopi art versus the
really?
Navajo art. I was not doing good.
I heard they use all parts of the canvas. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
At the end of the semester, the whole grade, this is the best part of the thing, the whole grade was based on one paper. And all
that is a lot of stress.
It's a lot of stress, but it also was like, oh, well, great. I don't have to memorize. Like, you know, like when you take an art class, like, they just show you images and you have to, like, name the artist and the painting.
Oh, shit.
So I knew if I could just kill on this paper,
yeah,
it'd be great. So I did Native American art as viewed through this particular two-part X-Files episode. Now, I don't even remember the episode intently, but you probably do.
Yeah.
Where it was like one where there was like a trailer buried under the ground.
Yeah,
and stuff
it's
like that.
It's at the end of season two or end of season three. Yeah, and there's like a Native American guide guy with
yes.
him. Yes,
and so like I really like went in and treated this as if it was a documentary. And my whole like point of view, like my college cool point of view was like, yeah, look how they, you know, how they represent and also pay, you know, pray, like, you know, they give it, sorry, I'm losing my word. Like they give homage, like, oh, sorry, I'm not homage. Homage, yeah. They're giving like an homage to like great Indian art, you know, like I created this total bullshit paper, yeah. All about that. But this is back before the X-Files were on DVD, and I had to go online to like an eBay site and ask somebody, do you have this? And then someone sent me a VHS copy from like Canada of these two episodes, and I bought the
two
episodes. Wow,
with like ads in between them?
Oh, yeah, 100%. And so that was like the best part about it, waiting because the package didn't come and the paper was due, and
I
hadn't seen the episodes in a while, and I was like frantically trying to get it. So I basically wrote a book report about a two-parter X-Files.
For your college.
For my college Native American history or Native American art class. And I don't think there was much Native American art in that episode.
Not really.
But I guess I could say there was like a...
I think the way they brought it in was using like through code, right? Because they used Native American code.
Yes, and yeah. I think I talked about that.
Yeah.
I don't remember the paper because it probably wasn't very good, but I got an A on it.
You got an A.
I got an A because I think I realized these teachers are reading the most boring papers at all times. I'm sure it was like, oh, I like the X-Files. This is a kind of a book report about the X-Files. Yeah. Right. A. Like, right. Like, just thinking outside the box. This kid really did it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was my claim to fame. But I was a big X-Files person. I had those like companion books. Remember they had those?
Oh,
like,
shit. You had those?
Oh,
I got to get those.
They're great. I have them for Buffy. I have them for Angel, too. Like, they're like a little glossy. They're a little bit embarrassing to have on your bookshelf.
Sure.
But they break down.
Well, you can't have them on your bookshelf.
Oh, no, no. I've hid my Buffy books, and now I think my X-Files ones are behind that, too. But they're like, you know, it looks like Case File, and they, you know, they break down the episodes, guest stars, and then they give you a little synopsis. It's basically Wikipedia in book form.
Right. Now you have pictures. The internet, so you don't need these books.
Exactly. But it was great to always like look through and like read about the episode.
Yeah.
But I loved, you know, and I saw the movies, and I was so excited about the movies. Like, the movies were big, and I even, like, I liked the movie so much that I even loved the soundtrack of the first X-Files.
Oh, it's a great soundtrack.
Great soundtrack.
Yeah, yeah, great music. I am this last week, a couple weeks ago, I talked to Mark Snow. I interviewed the guy
who
did the music for it.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated, and I think rewatching them, because I haven't watched them in a while, was like, what has Chris Carter done since? Like, whenever, I mean, Millennium, sure, we got that.
Yeah.
But he, like, I mean, he really created this genre-defining show that, like, really, when I watch it now, I'm like, oh, man, Fringe ripped this show off.
Oh, yeah.
Crazily.
And the procedural thing, like CSI uses it. Like, a ton of these shows basically took that template. It's a very, very influential show. So he did that.
Right.
He did Millennium. He did Lone Gunman, of course.
Of course, yeah.
Then he did a show called Harsh Realm that happened right after it that didn't go well. That was like a virtual reality thing. Then I was just reading an interview with him. He just kind of took 20 years off, he said.
That's kind of like the thing that I've noticed. Like, it wasn't like he failed. It was sort of like, I've done this. And he kind of, you know, he spun off X-Files enough, you know, I felt like. And I feel like whenever I read articles about him or see him at like a panel, it's always like, oh, the next movie or the next thing. Yeah. I think that she just bring back X-Files with two different characters.
Well,
you know,
he just said, so he kind of did nothing. He's doing a new Amazon show right now called The After.
Okay.
Which is another sci-fi
show. And I
apologize
if you've talked about this.
I haven't. And then he just said in an interview right now that he's been talking to Fox about rebooting The X-Files, about having two new agents.
It's a genius idea because I really love Fringe. Like, I'm a big Fringe fan. I thought it was great. And Fringe, I think, did something that the X-Files didn't do, which were, you know, the X-Files, you'd be wading through the Monster of the Week episodes.
Yeah.
Not wading through. Some were great.
Some were great.
And
yeah.
Some were just like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, but you couldn't wait for the mythology episodes.
Right.
Like, that's the one. Because basically the characters have these, like, amnesia in between
mythology be like,
episodes and
that's
the,
right.
Yeah, no one is on the same page anymore.
Yeah, yeah. Fuck the guy who like eats cancer. We gotta go after the aliens.
Yeah, there's a wolfman in this town. We gotta so what Fringe always did, which I really appreciated, was like they had those Monster of the Week episodes, which were equally as good, but the beginning and end of each episode tied into the grand mythology.
Oh, that's cool.
And it's really cool because it gives you, it always is like, it's like saying, yes, this exists, but we're just deviating right now.
There's dessert, but you have to have some salad.
Yeah. And I feel like, but that, like, for me, like, that you wanted, I don't know, you always wanted to see what these characters are up to.
They did that a couple times. You're right, not that much that they were tied into the big mythology. What it does help with, like, when I was trying to get Emily into the show, it did help that there were basically these standalone movies that I could be like, you have to know nothing about it. just watch this episode, and that there wasn't anything I had to explain to her.
Yeah, you can. I mean, you can really get into the. It's such a great concept. It's really well done.
And it's so interesting. I found now that I've been doing this, people fall on the side of mythology versus the monster of the week. Mm-hmm. Like, there are almost everyone sort of picks a side.
Yeah.
I was always a mythology guy. Like, later it kind of falls apart, but I always loved those episodes way more than the monster of the week ones. But then there are people, huge X-Files fans, who were always way more into the monster of the week episodes.
Well, the monster of the week episodes are fun because it's like the promise of the premise of the X-Files too. It's like,
oh yeah,
if we're here, we're gonna do like fun, like they're like the creature investigators, and it's like, you know, the Chupacabra episodes, like that.
And the Wolfman and the Native American, reservation,
like that. Like, I feel like those are fun. But then I found the mythology engrossing and I wanted to know more.
Yeah.
And then watching it last night when I was watching these episodes.
And you watched Dwayne Barry and Ascension, which are really hardcore mythology episodes.
And they're great. But I was like also remembering, we should talk about this probably in the meat of the episode, but I felt like Chris Carter was making these decisions in probably the best like way, because now the internet is so on top of you. Like every day when The Walking Dead comes out, the next day it's a recap, or even that night it's a recap. You know, no show gets an episode that's not really picked apart. And when I was a fan of X-Files, I would go online and you could find discussions of it.
Do you know I have printouts from those discussions from that week, and we're going to talk about them.
Oh, that's great. All right.
Yeah.
So that's how I would look at things, or if I was confused by something or couldn't remember something, you could go and look. And I feel like he made a lot of crazy choices in this show that I feel like may have been done way differently if it was if he had to answer to
just like the noise of the internet all the time. What he did was, so there was this message board that I go to called alt.tv.xfiles.
Yes.
And Google bought whatever that, and now they've archived it. So I look on, you know, the week that the episode airs, what people are saying. And there's about a couple hundred people, so really hardcore X-Files fans that are on there. And Chris Carter would go read those message boards and really like look at what the actual fans were saying. Now Game of Thrones episode airs. If you're a guy who created Game of Thrones, let's see what people say about the episode. You go on Twitter, it's overwhelming.
Yeah.
It's such bullshit. So much noise. But here he could go and look at like very targeted stuff. People who were into the show want to talk about it in an intelligent way, because at that point, still, it's early internet days. People are still having pretty good conversations on there.
It was really for fans to talk to other fans and dissect it. It's kind of what you want everything to be, but it's devolved into this.
Oh my God. It's just terrible. Children screaming at each other.
Yeah.
So Dwayne Barry, this guy, I really liked this kid. I would say this is probably my favorite two-part. It's the first two-part of the X-Files ever did.
Oh, really? I didn't realize that. Okay.
They hadn't done one yet. They did like Squeeze and then Tombs later. They're not two-parters. Right. They just had the same bad guy come back. But I thought this is maybe my favorite one. And Dwayne Barry, the main character in it, I thought that guy was really good. That actor is named Steve Railsback. He did a really good job of being sort of a psychopath, but very sympathetic.
Well, it's interesting because I feel like, you know, looking at any of these shows, there's something comical about them right off the gate, you know, right out of the gate. Because it's sort of like, you know, just the way that they're dressed, the vibe of it. Like
the size of their cell phones.
Yeah, and Dwayne Barry to me felt like a bottle episode. Like, I felt like they ran out of money because it's very isolated.
The first one,
The first one. But I was like, and there was points in that first episode where he's like kind of screaming and going crazy. I'm like, is this guy a terrible actor? And then I was like, oh, actually, I really think like his performance within these two episodes is very well balanced. And like it works. Like it's like it's a tricky line sometimes, but they always had amazing actors, I felt.
They really did. And this one, I mean, I didn't think of it when I don't know how long it's been since you watched The X-Files, but the first scene of this episode is fucking bananas. Like, you see aliens and you see a UFO pulling him out. And in the beginning, I was like, oh, it's just in his head. It's subjective. But then you see the dog outside the house. Like, that's an objective, like, camera angle.
Well, that's saying, like, there are aliens here. And I feel like, and I love that, like, you know, like, the aliens look like the aliens that you always thought. Like, he didn't really do a spin on, like, what aliens.
They're alien-ass aliens.
Yeah, and it's, the torture scenes in that episode are really upsetting. Like, they were really well done. And
I mean, the idea of having someone's mouth forced open is so scary. You know, it plays on like dentistry and all that. But it's like open so hard, and they're shooting the red thing in, and he's screaming.
And it's looks so painful. It looks so painful.
His lip was quivering. I don't know how they did that.
Well, it's good acting. But like, but that episode, I mean, you know, like again for that bottle thing, it's like it basically takes place, you know, in a handful of locations, very small, and oddly, like they catch up with Fox Mulder, like swimming at like a giant facility
in his tiny red Speedos.
I mean, when he like Mulder in a bikini, it was like that clearly was like a note that Fox was like, get him down to those skivvies.
Yeah, you
like,
gotta sexualize him. It's interesting. A friend of mine just sent me a picture. Later, as the X-Files went on, there were a lot of like pictures of these two characters, like very sexualized and like sexual sort of, you know, suggestive poses and stuff. Because it's interesting because these characters are so sort of bottled up.
Yeah.
They're so contained and so like in a way grounded.
Yeah.
But then they sort of throw in this like little sexy stuff to like try and get them to become sex symbols or something.
I think it did work, though. I think that David Duchovny, you know, I mean, he was doing those Red Shoes Diaries before this, too.
Right. he was.
Let me ask you if this is something that I misremember or, like, I remember, like, what I love is, like, seeing the houses of our main characters. Like,
yes.
And I feel like when we got to see, like, I like seeing their houses. I think later on in the season progressed, you saw much more of their like houses.
Yeah.
But like, I feel like when you saw Mulder's apartment with the answering machine and stuff like that, I kind of just like,
oh, yeah,
love seeing where they live. Yeah.
He sleeps on the couch, which is like a fun little detail. He doesn't sleep in his bedroom.
I love that kind of stuff. Like that, like that, I remember like feeling like so, like, oh, we got to see like where they live now. And
yeah, because you've just seen their work and now you're seeing where they live, who they are, and it gives you insight into who they are as people, not just as, you know, FBI agents. That's interesting you say that. A couple weeks ago, I found on a message board people having a very in-depth discussion about where Scully lives, what floor it's on.
Oh, and, wow.
Oh, there's a garden outside, so that could be... So all this stuff. So it's interesting that you could see, like, this show, because of the internet, people are really getting into the minutiae of it.
Yeah.
Like, in the message boards, you'll see people are talking about what kind of watch Mulder wears and why his watch keeps changing. So there's people really get into very specific stuff about it, and something about the show... The fact that there is sort of this big mythology really lends people to trying to pick everything apart and seeing if everything is a clue, you know?
Well, yeah, and I feel like I love stuff like that because I would say, and you know, both of us have done a lot of TV, nothing as intense as like something where people are like, you know, Game of Thrones.
No, I haven't done my X-Files.
Yeah, exactly. So you would argue that probably all those, I would say 90% of those things that people are noticing are just like
nothing.
Prop mistakes or like some guy did the
prop
wrong
guy
thing.
Lost the watch.
Exactly.
Yeah, so you got to get a new watch.
Some watch broke or someone stole it. But the thing that I thought was so interesting about this whole episode, like the premise of Dwayne Barry, the first one, if we just tackle the first one, is like they bring in Fox Mulder. X-Files has been closed. Bring in Fox Mulder because this guy is holding people hostage, and he has had an alien encounter. But they bring him in to be like, but you can't talk to him about the alien encounter.
Just use some other guy.
Yeah, so why bring him in? Like, it was a really weird premise to bring him in and then go, but don't, whatever you do,
that's like
don't do that.
Michael Jordan playing baseball. Like, no, bring me in for my shit. Because when they bring him in, he's like, why am I here? And she goes, well, he escaped from a mental institution. And I was like, oh, okay. So he's crazy. You'll be great with him.
And I also thought, like, just from a story perspective, just have him... like,
relate to the guy.
Or just have him be on that case. And then the interesting thing is, and this guy has an alien connection. Not like, let's go get Mulder.
Because this guy talks about aliens. Also, it doesn't make sense to me that you wouldn't want to. Wouldn't you want a guy who's like, dude, I totally believe there's fucking elves. Give me the gun. We'll go take care of the elves.
That's
wouldn't you want that?
Oh, 100%. Like, I didn't understand why CCH Pounder was being such
one
a hard
of the all-time greatest names.
Oh, my gosh.
CCH Pounder.
It's amazing. She is the best.
You know, she got nominated for an Emmy for that episode.
Really?
Yeah.
That's actually kind of surprising.
Because she doesn't do very much.
She doesn't do much at all.
No.
Yeah. I mean, that she's not bad, but there's nothing Yeah, there's nothing neither here nor there. I mean, it's like, it's a fine performance, but...
Yeah, she's got a great, like, this guy's full of shit face, you know? Yeah. And she pulls that out a lot. She has a good moment at the end when she's like, hey, by the way, these things that we pulled out of him.
Yeah.
Maybe there's something to it. So that's a... She has a fun little arc.
But it's small.
Very small. Barely there. I mean, she could do this in her sleep.
Yo, this is like she could shoot 5 Law and Orders and do this in one day. I wrote down this one note, which I just think is a funny. Well, I mean, now I'm saying it's funny, but I love that. Like, I think it's about rights. But whenever you see people watching TV, for the most part, on TV shows, they're always watching some black and white thing. And this episode opens up with this guy like watching like old black and white footage. I always think that's like a funny, like weird.
It's always like old shit.
They can't afford anything recent or news. I was like, oh yeah, get some movie from the 1920s.
It should be like them watching Grace Under Fire, which is a show I reference a lot on this show. But that would be great. Mulder's a big Grace Under Fire fan. The other thing CCH Pounder does a lot in this episode is like, when Mulder's in there talking, like roll her eyes whenever he brings up, like, I know aliens are real. And she's like, fucking this guy.
My favorite thing in this episode was a camera move. And I don't know if you remember this, but they're wiring Mulder up to go inside the tourism place.
This camera
and
moves.
The camera is like the director of this kind of went wild for a moment. Like
this is the first episode directed by Chris Carter and written by Chris Carter. It's the first thing he's ever directed. So he's a little like,
it's kind of crazy. Like Mulder's literally just getting wired up. Like that's it. Like, and they're going, okay, here's a wire. It goes in your ear. Here's a bulletproof vest that, you know, protects you from bullets. But the camera starts in the left-hand corner of the frame and goes down to the right-hand corner.
Oh, yeah, and then it comes back and it goes the other way. Like, it's like swiping back and forth.
I mean, it's interesting, but it's also weird because the camera move is like dictating a time jump, but it's the
same. There's no time jump.
There's no time jump. It's the same.
It should be like me telling you like, hey, Paul, so I'll teach you karate. Cut to, all right, now you know karate.
Now let's teach you karate. It's just like the same line. That's such an odd thing.
That is right. It conveys a time cut where there really isn't any time jump. But I thought so he's been talking to Dwayne Barry on the phone, right?
Yes.
Then why do they dress Mulder up as an EMT? Isn't he going to go in and he's going to be like, wait, does everybody talk in like a soft monotone?
Well, I also found that like again, it doesn't make that much, like that's where this episode, like I love this stuff that's happening, but it just felt like, why are we making it so complex? It's like, why would you even put him in? Like, why do you even need
to? I feel like this is probably what happened. It makes sense to me that they would get Mulder because this guy's into UFOs.
Got it. Makes sense to me.
Yep. Makes sense to send a guy in who knows about UFOs, get them to connect on that. At some point at the script, they look and they were like, there isn't enough conflict in this little area.
Right.
We need to ramp it up. How do we make a conflict between him and CCH Pounder? And they were like, all right, we'll make it so that CCH Pounder tells them to not talk about it. And it feels like the big machinations of the plot were already in that they couldn't change it. But it feels like a little thing that was added just to add a little bit more tension in that part.
Because in my mind, again, like when he comes in as the EMT, it's quickly like, oh, yeah, well, I'm not really an EMT. He's not even on the phone.
I don't know anything about trying to not let a guy die.
Yeah, it was so weird. It was like, it was sort of like a lot of half, half ideas. Like, you're an EMT. Actually, I'm not. All right, anyway,
let's talk about aliens. Also, it would be so fucking distracting to me if I'm talking to you and I have a thing in my ear and I have to pretend there isn't a thing in my ear and they're talking to me all the fucking time. Like, don't do that. I'm just going to say yes to nothing and then the guy's going to be on to me.
I really liked that scene between him and Dwayne Barry when they finally got face to face and start talking about the aliens and stuff like that.
His sister and shit. Yeah.
And I especially, in the Ascension episode, I love the interrogation scene between them. I thought that was an awesome...
I think this episode, the way these two work so well, which you pointed out, is that the first one is very claustrophobic.
Yes.
It's all very contained. They're indoors. The second one is all outside. But the second one does really well. It's called Ascension, and it's him literally physically ascending to the top of this mountain.
Yeah.
But it really feels like more of a descent. It feels like Mulder's getting more and more harried as it goes. His 5 o'clock shadow is getting thicker. I think Mulder's performance in these two is really good, where he starts off normal and he gets more and more unhinged as it goes.
Yeah.
So it really is him like going into a pit. And I think contrasting that with physically going up really worked for me.
Well, I'm going to throw out a theory for you. I feel like the aliens of it all, the the conspiracy of it all is like a drug to Fox Mulder. And like when he gets involved in this stuff and it gets real, it's almost like he's going on a binge. So he's like,
oh, yeah.
You know, it's like he has the affectation of he becomes more quick to act and or pounce. He loses all of the calm demeanor. He almost hulks out, if for lack of a better.
That's exactly right. He goes on a bender.
Yeah, and so like this stuff is what kind of fuels him.
Yeah,
and I thought that's like I was like interesting to see
that's
that.
That's a really great analogy because even heroin, you know, people who are into it love doing it, even though it's bad for him.
But he's like sliding. It's like, oh, you're giving. Because I think that like the knowledge of his sister and like that, like it's he's doing everything he can to say to stay sober or whatever, and then when it's there, he's like, no, I need to get back. It's like it's so close for him to do it, like, and you know, he wants it so bad.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's why he's like sort of excited. There's a point where he is talking to Dwayne Barry, and he's like, "Let them go. I'll go in with you."
Yeah.
Mulder kind of wants to be abducted a little bit.
100%.
He wants to be taken by these aliens.
I mean, like, he wants it so badly because I think he needs to. I mean, it's like the ultimate fan. He wants to be. You know, he wants to meet the
yeah,
people.
Yeah, yeah.
He wants to meet the stars. He's a stalker of aliens. It's like,
that's totally. Yeah, he wants to meet Alice Cooper. That's who aliens are to him. I don't know why that's the best example I could come up with.
No, but I think that's a perfect example.
For huge rock stars. Yes, go ahead.
No, I was like, but he, like, and I think it's like a funny, like F you to him that he can't ever, like, he wants it, but he can't get there. And then there's like an insult to injury that, like,
The one who doesn't isn't a fan.
Yeah,
yeah.
She gets
it's like
there.
You don't even like basketball. You're going to see the Bulls.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You get to hang out with Michael Jordan. You're going to play one on one with him. Dude?
Yeah.
But now
that's exactly right.
Here's my thought about the whole thing. Was these two whole episodes basically written so
Her pregnancy?
Yes. So she get pregnant.
That is part of it. But I think it works so well. Like
it does.
Out of necessity, they really. Like came up with something great that then affects, you know, the shit that happens in these two episodes is part of the X-Files forever. It changes Scully. It changes the arc of the whole thing. So, yeah, but, oh, that's interesting. I made this note. You were talking about how to tell him not to talk about UFOs. But before that, CCH Pounder says, whatever crap you got to make up about spacemen and UFOs, just keep him on the phone. So she tells him to talk about it. Then when he's going in, she tells him to not talk about it.
But it's interesting because it's sort of like, the only, I get, but I also felt like they were, when he first got on the phone with him, he was not talking about aliens. He was like very much just doing the job of a hostage.
They had the honesty, conciliation, containment, resolution, like those.
Oh, right.
Things.
Yeah. And the thing, like the giant
guy
chalkboard. I did just note too, like, and it's funny, I think it was a 90s thing. But the smoke, there's always smoke in all those rooms.
Everything is smoky.
It's really funny. Yeah. I was like, wow, it really is dark and smoky and small.
But it really, like, I think it's part of the X-Files look, you know, the smoky, the stark lighting coming from, like, sharp angles, from, like, sharp sources.
And you don't ever get to see clear, like, with the monsters, too, you never really got to see them 100%
exactly.
Clear. You got to see them a little bit.
I mean, this is the most we've ever seen the fucking aliens, and you really see them, but
you were so psyched, and it was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And, like, I think you're right. Like, the idea, like, the dog's perspective is interesting. I didn't think about that when I was watching it.
Yeah, because all of it, and when I get to the message boards, there's a lot of discussion about that. Like, is this real? Is this subjective? Like, well, what Mulder sees when he's thinking of Scully being kidnapped, is that an actual objective thing, or is that just him? And what Dwayne Barry sees and stuff.
Well, what do you think? I mean, I think that Dwayne Barry is telling the truth.
Yeah, it's. I think he is telling the truth, and I think he really is. I mean, there's time loss that happens so many times. I thought the whole setup of the first episode is so good. If you think of these together as a movie, which, then you know, it's 90 minutes. It's basically a movie. Within 10 minutes, Mulder is already in the hostage negotiation.
Right.
So that moves. It's set up so quickly. It moves so quickly for a movie. It would take like a half hour to get there.
Yeah.
They're there in 10 minutes. And I think there's so much going on in that hostage thing. The time loss, the lights coming in.
Yeah.
It seems to me pretty obvious that he is actually getting kidnapped and he's actually seeing it. Maybe he's filled in some of the details because he sees humans with the aliens.
Right.
This is the first time you get the sense that how far humans' involvement in the conspiracy really goes. This is the first real indication of that.
Yeah, because when he's being interrogated too, like, he's aware of, like he sees Krychek and those two other guys hanging out by the window. And there's something really, I was also thinking about this too, like, because this is like, again, I haven't watched them in a long time. So
did you like watching it again?
Oh, 100%. It held up for me way more than I thought it was going to.
Oh,
I was talking about it the other day. I was like, this is like, it's good.
It's really,
really
good. Yeah.
And I thought it was really interesting, like, because like, so Scully, when she... So she is, like, I feel like pretty much on board because she is, like, skeptical about, like, what the metal was. But then she does bring it to the grocery store to pay with a check to kind of wipe it out.
And she does take it to the guy to get get a look. I mean, she's intrigued. She's into
it. Yeah. And I thought that, like, was that, like, the most we've seen her into it at this point? Was that, like, a big turning point to see her?
You've seen her. You know what's interesting is that one of the knocks on the X-Files that you hear from people a lot is, like, she's seen UFOs and why is she always skeptical? When you watch the show, it's a lot more nuanced than you remember it.
Yeah.
On paper, you're like, he's the believer, she's the non-believer. In reality, her character, they give her, like, reasons to believe in this stuff. Like, pretty often. She's not a crazy person who's just denying everything. She's always sort of investigating to the best of her ability.
Well, she's like, I would say that she is skeptical of what she's seeing. Like, she's always saying, like, well, what about this? What about that? Like, she's
right.
And she's like,
yeah.
So it's not as, not as if, like, she has valid other reasons for it.
And
like, you know, where I feel like his flaws that he would always just believe that everything is a conspiracy. Did they ever prove Fox wrong about that? Like was, or was he always just right?
No, he's already, so far, you know, this is the beginning of season two, but he's been proven wrong a bunch of times. And it's very
but
obvious.
Because, it's the conspiracy, or is it because like
no, because he was crazy and she was like, let's look at all the evidence.
Okay.
And what she came up with was actually right. Like, there's an episode called Eve where it's these genetically engineered kids and there's crazy shit going on, but Mulder's convinced it's UFOs. And it's not UFOs. And Scully does actually proper investigating. Mulder goes in with his preconceived ideas, you know. That's what it always is. The difference is Mulder approaches the situation knowing what's going on and he's usually right. Scully goes in not knowing and wants to investigate and figure it out, which I think makes her ultimately a better agent.
I think so too. I think she, and that's why the aliens took her, because she's better.
Because she's better.
Yeah.
But
I don't want this guy who's like so into it. You want the alien fan who's a little bit hard to get. Like,
I know.
You know the guy's like, I love you. I love all your albums. Alice Cooper, you're the best. You know, Alice Cooper wants to hang out with somebody who's a little bit cool.
Yeah.
You know?
Alice Cooper wants to hang out with someone who's not just going to be like, so when you wrote 18 Till I Die, what were you thinking? You don't want that. You want someone who can, like, talk about, you know, what TV shows they like watching and stuff.
Now, this episode also brings in one of my favorite characters, which is Krychek, too.
Yeah, Krychek just showed up the episode before it. I emailed you and told you. What a motherfucker, huh?
I love that. Like, I
love
that character. Has he worked that much since then?
Not really. He becomes a huge part of the X-Files, obviously.
Right.
What I think he's really good at is changing his energy for when he's good and when he's bad.
Yeah. Oh, the scene between him and the smoking man
in
the car is a great, great scene.
He does it so well. On the message boards, and I'll get to it later when I read it, people hate him.
Oh, really?
And they call him Rat Boy. They don't ever call him Krychek. That's his name, is Rat Boy.
Because they're on the Mulder fan.
They're like,
you're betraying our main character.
But clearly they have such a strong reaction to this character means that they, you know, there's something very compelling about
it. Oh, yeah, because, I mean, you're putting yourself in the mindset of Mulder and Scully, and this person's, like, hurting them, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and I love, like, I forget, like, again, all these, like, great performances, like Mitch Pileggi.
Oh, so good.
So good.
Oh, when he's chewing nothing and just looking at you. So fucking badass.
So great. It's and the second episode, I feel like where the first episode was, like you said, like, we were claustrophobic. And then the second episode, that was like almost like a James Bond sequence on top of, like, the
cable car. Yeah.
Yeah, that was, like, really kind of a great thing.
Fucking scary. I can't handle cable cars. We were somewhere, and to get to a bar, you had to go to a cable car down to, like, the beach. It's horrifying. They always seem like they're just hanging. There's nothing below them. They're just hanging.
Well, I remember, like, I think it was a James Bond movie where one of the characters, like, was eating the cable, like Jaws, I think. Richard Kiel is like,
oh, that's right.
Like, biting the cable.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like being hung up that high. Yeah, that's not fun.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
But do you think that this is my question to you. Do you think that this episode was written, like, was Chris Carter driving to work every day in Canada and then saw, like,
there's
a cable car. Like, when I write my episode, this I'm gonna be on a cable car.
We got a fucking cable car sequence.
Like, that's going to be really expensive. Who cares? We'll shoot one episode just inside a travel agency
in one room.
In a dark room. All right, go.
Exactly. Get me a travel agency for a week, and then the next one, I'm hanging Mulder off a cable car. Yeah, exactly.
And it was also shot in one of those weird night for day things. Like, they clearly didn't shoot at night, but they put, like, I felt like they put lenses on the camera to make it seem darker.
The lighting in this one is really interesting. There's a lot of, like in the beginning where Dwayne Barry's with his therapist.
Oh, yeah.
Which I thought was a great scene because he's, like, trying to convince that he shouldn't take medication, but he says, they're coming again. That's not a great way to get your dosage decreased. They're coming again. Give me less medication. All right. But even in that room, the lighting was so, like, it's obviously, like, you could see, you know, like we said, we've shot stuff, obviously. Yeah. And I could see, like, okay, so there's a light over here going in through this window. There's a light over here going in through this window. But it's, for most TV shows, they try and hide that. On this show, it's almost like part of the aesthetic is that
it's super
clearly
stylized.
Lit in a very specific stylized way.
I mean, it's even the opening titles kind of dictate that, because the opening titles are shot the same way, like light shooting from the left and right.
Oh,
like,
yeah, totally.
You know, it's like it's very... It's
seeds
all
germinating. So scary.
I did want to talk about my favorite thing, which is I feel like maybe the X-Files is the reason for... It's like one of the jokes that we did on NTSF, but it's my favorite thing of all time, the enhance.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, because Dwayne Barry kidnaps
Scully,
and she's in the trunk, and the only footage they have is through, like, this police camera, and they get the police camera, and they're in this room, and the police camera is so grainy, so black and white. And he's like, can you zoom in on this section?
And then it's
like,
perfect quality.
And he's like, enhance. Yeah. And it's like, it was so clear. Like, in my mind, I was like, oh, they should just stop enhancing now. And he goes, oh, there's a girl in the back
clearly,
of the trunk.
Clearly Scully, yeah. Nope, it's like a headshot.
It was a beautiful shot.
Yeah. You could make a poster out of that. One thing I was saying, in that scene, Dwayne Barry kills the cop.
Yes.
He kills so many people, but he's still... There's something still so, like, innocent and
he's
sympathetic
likeable.
About he's very likable.
He's not a villain, I don't think, because he's clearly,
really not.
Like, it's like a mother being, like, it's like a mother trying to get back her kid, or like he's being chased by these aliens. Like, he has no control. He's like, I need to go. Like, you don't understand.
Yeah, and the fact that he wants to take the therapist makes so much sense, because it's like, this is the guy who won't believe me. I'll fucking show you. There's something very desperate and relatable about that, where he's like, I'm just going to fucking show you what actually happens.
And
it makes sense.
Why I think that opening scene is so important, because it... Well, I mean, I think it is. It really is happening to him. I mean, even if it was in his head, like, he's sympathetic.
He's still sympathetic.
And, like, I love how he refers to himself in the first person. And
that's one of the side effects of being kidnapped by aliens, is you talk like an athlete.
Hey,
you start talking like, Dwayne Barry's always giving 110%.
Don't stop Dwayne Barry.
Yeah. Like, can't stop Dwayne Barry.
I did love when because he did give that cop a chance to get out of there.
Oh, yeah, he did.
But, you know, but look, we can't fault the cop. A cop shouldn't get out of there.
No. That's a bad cop, then.
I mean, like Colin Hanks' character in Fargo, and when Billy Bob was like, go, get out of here. And he was like, all right, I will. And he did. And it was great. You know, obviously played this character and created his arc. But, I think, you know, the cop did the right thing. But that footage was shot really cool, too, because they... did shoot it from, like, the camera, like, they had, like...
From the police, the car's camera? Yeah,
it starts in the beginning like that. The show is really well-directed.
They do a lot of cool stuff like that in this episode, where they have that, where then it cuts right to the grainy footage from the thing. So they do, like, good, like, time cuts. Like, that's a good jump to go from this actually happening to Mulder reviewing it. All that shit in the middle is boring. We don't need it. Let's go right to it. We don't need Mulder getting a call that there's somebody, that they found footage that the cop got killed. You know what happened? Just go do it.
He's there. And the only thing that I was like curious about is, like, how did he broker this deal with the aliens? How did Dwayne Barry, like, kind of be like...
Yeah, I don't... Well, here's the thing. this is what I think is going on. And there's a lot of discussion on the message boards about it. In the last episode, which you didn't see, Sleepless, he says, Krychek says, what are we going to do about Scully? And Cigarette Smoking Man says, I'll handle it. And then in this one, when Krychek is in the car with Cigarette Smoking Man, and he goes, "How? What are we going to do about, you know?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, and he goes, the problem is handled. I think that, well, also there's a whole question, how does Duane Barry know where she lives, right?
That's
a big
yeah.
question that they talk about. I think, obviously, in this sort of, you find out that humans and aliens are in cahoots.
Right.
So I think that's part of the plan is to take
Scully. So like the Cigarette Smoking Man was probably the arbiter of that. Like, hey, guys. Here's the deal.
Yeah.
Leave
hey, guys, new
guy
deal.
Alone.
New deal.
New deal. Like, we're, let's just start over again.
Moving on. Yeah.
They met at a Denny's. They sat down. They had a quick little meeting. Did,
yeah, it's an alien, but with just like a fake human mustache.
Did, So Duane Barry, so then the aliens kind of made Duane Barry feel that he was responsible for that switch?
I think, you know, they sort of told Duane Barry, I think, like, this is where she is. If you go get this woman, then, you know, we won't take you. We'll take this
Got
woman
it.
Instead.
Okay.
I think that's how it is. It's sort of
vague. And then they kind of JFK him by, like Lee Harvey Oswald.
Oh,
by, like,
they fucking totally Lee Harvey Oswald him. Yeah.
It's
totally,
a very, you know.
I mean, that's a tough, I thought that scene where Duane Barry sort of gives up Scully and he's so excited. By the way, whenever a madman is yelling, yes, something bad has happened. Yes, he's gotten things his way. That's not good. But Mulder's talking to him. And Duane Barry, again, we're talking about, he's such a sympathetic character. He's like, I'm sorry. He's like, I hope they don't hurt her too much. Like, he feels genuinely bad about it.
And then also Duane Barry's like, I saw your sister up there. Right?
He says he saw little girls
okay,
up there.
Yeah, okay, little girl, yeah.
All right, so, I've seen little girls up there. Yeah. And that again gives Mulder like more, you know.
Yeah, to run.
Like, keep going, yeah.
Also, there's just one other thing about Scully. I'll come back to it if I remember it. Yeah, there's so many things I was thinking.
I thought that, when Mulder starts talking to Duane Barry, like you were saying, when they're still at the hostage thing, and he's just asking it, he's not at that point even trying to diffuse the situation. He's just trying to find out about it. Like, are they tall? Are they short? What are their faces like?
That's what I'm saying. Is he wants that, like,
he just needs to know, and it's not even about really anything other than just getting that information.
Well, here's my question then. To you, and I keep on having these. I'm like, I'm so into what you're saying, and then I get my like why? Oh, wait, why I keep on blanking on what I'm gonna say? Damn it! Oh, this never happens.
It's okay. This, I mean, I think there's so much
baby.
To talk about.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
all right, I'll come back to it.
I
gotta write it.
I thought that thing where they sort of when they take you and you're just like sort of frozen, the waking nightmare thing.
Yes.
That is so scary. That's
I
a real that. Phenomenon that happens.
I read about that. This is my question was, why did Mulder give him crap and say like, all I saw was a helicopter. That's all I saw. Like, well, clearly there's a beam of light. Is he scullying right there? Like, I mean, like, it was an odd choice for him to be like, I don't believe you now.
That is really interesting.
Well, because I guess maybe Mulder's like, you're full of shit. You killed Scully. You don't really believe in aliens.
I think he's just angry because part of him thinks that maybe he killed, that Scully's dead. And
but that beam of light was intense.
Yes, it was intense. And it wasn't just a helicopter.
Yeah.
That's a good point because he sort of believes, even when he's with Duane Barry and he says, hey, go unlock the door and that they shoot Duane Barry. Even after that, we're just saying his full name, by the way. Duane Barry.
You have to.
You have to.
He says it multiple times.
Duane Barry calls himself Duane Barry. When he sort of sends him to the window, I was like, did Mulder do that on purpose so he could get shot? And then it becomes clear he did. But then even after all that, he tells Scully, I believe him.
Yeah.
So I think Mulder believes him until that happens. And then the idea that he just killed Scully and left her in a ditch somewhere.
Yeah.
That's like so scary to him. At the end, the conversation that he has with Skinner is really cool. Where they're for the first time talking to each other. Because he's been around a little bit, talking to each other just like people, and there's no like outside influence or anything.
Yeah.
And just Mulder is going, hey, do you think he says, Skinner asks him, Skinner's like, hey, do you think she's dead? He's like, you're the boss, you should know.
Yeah.
But he's like, I don't know what they're capable of. They're just having like sort of a candid conversation about the shit they're in.
And I agree with that. And then, but that's why I felt the end of that scene was so weird because he's like, they're having this like one-on-one conversation. He's like, oh, and the X-Files is open again.
Yeah,
and I felt it was like, oh, it didn't feel like that. Like that, it didn't feel like that was the right tag for that conversation. Like, because it felt like
well, I
they were talking about potentially a murder, and it was like, but let's
Well, I think what he was doing was, like, listen, there's bad guys that are trying to do this thing to us. All we have to do to fight back is reinstate the X-Files. It's almost like a desperate move.
Okay, so he's just like, yeah. It won't shut us down.
I think it's just sort of sending a message. And okay. I think Mitch Pileggi, or however you say his name, was so good in that scene. He's like so badass. Great. He's like, what's the exact line that he says when he says, there's only the one thing that I can do, Mr. Mulder. As of right now, I'm reopening the X-Files. That's what they fear the most. Like, it's like sort of this, it's supposed to be this badass moment, but then Mulder just walks out. I don't know why
There's something weird about that. Like, it was fulfilling it at the same time. Like, oh, okay.
Mulder should, I guess
because his partner may or may not be
dead. I think we can sort of let him go for that, you know. What else? There's him referring to himself as Dwayne Barry. I guess it kind of works. I mean, I looked up in the message boards and people are talking about that. They said a lot of people who have schizophrenia do that.
Okay.
But it makes sense. So much horrible stuff is happening to him that he's sort of dissociating a little bit.
And he was shot too. Like, wasn't he shot? Like, he had. He had some issues.
He's gone through a bunch of shit. And
he did play for the NBA for a couple seasons.
He did, so he's still got that arrogance. But I thought they sort of introduced a little thing where Scully finds a psychiatric profile and that he was shot in the head or something. Yeah. So there's that little thing where Mulder's talking to him and he's tied, and then she's telling him, like, he's just fucking lying. He's just a crazy person.
Yeah.
Do you think, as the audience, we're supposed to, at that moment, think that he's been lying too? Or is that just sort of Scully? Are we supposed to also think?
I think it's supposed to be... I mean, I think, yes. I think I think Scully doing her job of being like...
It's psychosis, which makes perfect sense for her approach.
Because it felt like, to me, like, okay, Foxy, you're going to chase after this guy, but here's a logical reason of why it's not... Why it could not be true.
And I think they do such a good job, because right at that, she tells him, like, this guy's just crazy. And then it cuts to Dwayne Barry saying the craziest shit we've heard in all of the X-Files, which is that humans and aliens are in cahoots. That's a big step from aliens are coming to aliens and humans are working together to do something.
Yeah.
So they plant enough of a doubt. They do a good job, I think, of, like, he's crazy, and then he says something crazy, and now Mulder has to decide, like... This is crazy, but is it crazy?
Well, now, based on what you were saying to me, it's interesting because, again, just kind of looking back at the show and remembering how all the things, like, things are now coming back, but it's like, it's an instance where Mulder is actually right. And there is evidence that could be viewed another way, but this is a theory where he is right. Like, he Scully is doing her job that she normally does, but she's wrong in this instance.
Right.
And it's, so that's an interesting thing.
And she kind of pays for it.
Yeah.
I thought that whole sequence where he's in there does such a good job of, you know, because it's just two people talking, him and Dwayne Barry just talking, but enough where, like, Dwayne Barry gets pissed off and then he has to win his trust back and then again loses his trust. So there's, like, a lot going on. It's a bottle episode. Those are really hard to write because you have to do so much with so little.
One of the episodes of NTSF that we never wrote, and I'm by saying it out loud, I'm reserving the right to write it. Is we were going to do a bottle episode in a bottle.
And, like a big bottle?
A big bottle. Like, it was going to be in a museum where they had, like, a ship in a bottle. It was like a bigger ship in a bottle.
Oh, that's
awesome.
And we awesome.
Like, got caught in the bottle.
Is that... Would you have to build that? Is that was?
Yeah, we were we actually had figured out a way to build a bottle, like a big bottle, like a big bottle.
Weirdly, would that bottle episode then be more expensive than a regular episode?
It probably would be.
Which is the point of bottle episodes, is to make it cheap.
Yeah.
But NTSF is done. Are you saying?
It is done. It is done.
Are you saying something?
I'm not saying anything. No, I mean, but we reserve the right to come back to it. Like, I just kind of felt like right now is like, to do another season of it, I felt like I wanted to just take a break and do something different. So
having a kid.
Well, it was to me, from a creative point of view too, it was like, oh, we did like 38 episodes of it. It was super fun.
Yeah.
And I was like,
great.
Well, now let me do something different and it'll be more fun. Like, just so you don't feel like I don't ever want to do anything where it feels like, and still doing it. Like, you know, like, it's like there's other ideas.
Which is so interesting because so much of, like, the way that this industry is built and just, like, give me another chance. I want to keep doing it. Like, driving things into the ground. The idea of stepping away from shows. Like, when Seinfeld stepped away, people were like, what the fuck are you doing? That's crazy. It's not crazy. It makes sense. Continuing to do the same thing is crazy.
Yeah, well, I think it's like it gives you an opportunity to try different stuff. And that last year, I got to do different stuff that I couldn't have done if I did do NTSF.
Yeah.
You know. But one of the things that we wanted to do, and Curtis Gwynn, who was a producer on that show, a big X-Files fan too. And we created our own version of the X-Files in an episode, and we always wanted to spin these guys off throughout the season. Like we had these like. It just kept on getting like mixed around, but we have a lot of X-Files things especially in our first season. We have like little throw tos of, we have like an X-Files department, I believe. And we had we wrote a whole part for Peter Serafinowicz to be like this like profiler at one point.
Yeah.
So yeah, things are in there. We have a lot of like
that
tips
guy's
of
great.
That. We have a cigarette smoking man in one of the episodes from last season. Like there's a lot of little X-Files nuggets throughout. As much as everything else that we love, we just would drop those things.
Well, that's good. That's what I love about your show is that it's such an homage to obviously stuff you love.
Yeah.
You're not making fun of stuff. But you're making fun of stuff you love. You come from
a
place
of affection.
Thing.
It's like,
yeah.
It's just like tipping the hat and having like these things like, well, which is a more comical smoking man. Like we had him we had him do a gossip section at the end of at the end of one of the episodes. He's like, you know, Miley Cyrus wearing a new dress. Is it fashion or aliens? And then we couldn't say anything because like we could never say that. It was the best legal note we ever got. It was like, Danny DeVito and Rhea Perlman got divorced. Now they're back together. Is it because of aliens? And they're like, you can't say that. Danny DeVito and Rhea Perlman, like, we can't say that they are associated with aliens. Like, they don't exist, aliens. They don't exist.
What?
Like, no. And they, like, so we couldn't, if that episode, when he does do his little thing at the end, we can't name any celebrity and aliens because we'd be drawing they could sue us for libel saying that they're
in cahoots with aliens?
Yeah, which was hilarious to me. Like, I never had gotten a legal note like that. And it was
be the greatest libel suit of all time.
It would be great. Like Danny DeVito's like, I am not friendly with aliens.
I am not an abductee. So the first episode did really well. I mean, compared to, you know, last season, 8.5 million people watched it. CCH Pounder and Chris Carter both earned primetime Emmy noms for excellence in primetime television. Outstanding guest actress in a drama. He was nominated for best writing. That episode was also sound editing and regular editing. It got nominated for that. And then the next one, Ascension, did even better in the ratings. 9.6 rating, 9.2 million households watched it. You know what I noticed is as soon as the second episode starts, yeah. Mulder seems to have a much thicker 5 o'clock shadow. Like, does stress make your hair grow faster?
Maybe he, that's like one of his side effects.
Yeah.
He looks like a guy that can grow a beard quick though.
He does also, he looks great in a 5 o'clock shadow.
Oh, yeah.
Mulder's a total babe in these episodes.
Mulder really, it's like you watch him and he carries off those 90s suits.
Oh yeah.
Really well.
Yeah.
Really well. I was like, wow, he still works.
I don't love his haircut in this episode. I don't know why. It's just shorter or something.
There is something weird about it. Yeah,
yeah, right? Like, it's not, you guys aren't nailing what you're going for when I see that hair.
Remember what he looked like in, I can't remember if it was the first or second movie, when he was like, holed up in that house and he had like a, crazy-ass beard?
That's
too?
The second movie.
Yeah,
that's the second
movie.
He has a crazy beard. Yeah, no good. I thought the cold open for the second episode was really good, where Mulder's sort of in her apartment, there's blood all over. Yes. It's such a scary image. Like, the person you love the most, the
and
person you trust
the
most.
The blood on the glass.
Oh, so scary.
Coming from under the table.
And then when he sees later, when he sees on Dwayne Barry's the matted blood and hair. It's so scary, but it's like sort of going back and forth between what's actually happening and then what he's seeing.
Well, I love that. Like, they kind of, you see the whole scene play out through his mind.
Through his perspective and her perspective. Yeah. And it's just seeing her helpless like that is no good. Also, knowing that she's pregnant and they made her like lie on her stomach and scream and shit.
By the way, was Scully's mom a fixture that, like, it was like, hi, Mrs. Scully? Like,
this is the second episode, I believe, she's showed up.
It was so funny. It was so, like, oddly friendly. They had such a nice relationship.
This is the first time they've met. Mulder is like a little like, oh, hey, Scully's mom. Like he wants to be nice to her.
I feel like
there
was like an episode where they had dinner, but we didn't ever see it. Yeah. Never made it. They had a really nice
time. Scully had him over like, hey, come on, Fox.
He's my mom. She's really nice.
Yeah, she's great. You'd love her. But yeah, obviously she's heard a lot about Mulder. heard a lot about you. There's a weird Nazi reference. You remember when he's... this is what I like about Fox. I'm just going to call him Fox.
Yeah,
is that he's always completely true to what he believes. Like, he won't, like, hide it. So when Skinner has that meeting with all the people about how to, like, get Scully back, and Skinner asks him, you know, Skinner says, hey, so he says he's listening to alien voices in his head. What do you think, Mulder? By all accounts, what is best for the case in that moment is Mulder going, no, let's just try and find the guy. Who cares?
Yeah.
Just... But Mulder's, you know, can't do that. He has to be like, I think he's kidnapped by aliens and people are listening. This is not good for the
case.
No,
he's always sabotaging himself.
He really is.
In front of, like, he should know how to have, like, a work voice. Like, he would get ahead further if he just was a little bit more selective with what he shared with
people. Yeah, totally.
You know, like, when everyone leaves, he could say, like, to Mitch Pluggy back, hey, and by the way, I do think that guy.
Yeah, but I just listen, dude. I know
these guys.
I know you think I'm crazy. I know they think I'm crazy.
I want you to know that, like, this is just between us.
Yeah,
and the
you're welcome. I saved your ass there. That song, Red Right Hand. You remember that one?
Oh,
that's a great
song.
Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. That's a great song.
I feel like they could afford music back then too. Like, cool music like this is not.
It became like more and more as the season went on, they could have more cool music
because
that's such a fucking scary song, and that's what he's actually listening to on the radio. Like, it's not just music. Like, I don't know what the term for it is.
No, but like
the
soundtrack music, where it's not like it's not.
Yeah,
it's,
but the characters can hear it.
Yeah,
because I thought it was just like playing in the soundtrack music, and then the sheriff says, "Could you turn that down?" And he turns it down. I like the idea that that's what Dwayne Barry listens to. Like Nick Cave makes perfect sense that he would listen to Nick Cave. Yeah.
Well, also progressive radio station be playing Nick Cave.
Yeah. What radio station is playing that in the 90s? I thought that this whole season has been sort of about keeping Mulder and Scully separate because part of it's because she's pregnant,
right.
But also the X-Files are done. They're not working together. So they're sort of in every episode, they're kind of fighting to work together. And then this episode, Ascension, is the ultimate version of that, where he really has to fight and go through a bunch of trials to like try and reunite. And then that, you know, obviously that doesn't happen. But this really like sort of encapsulated the whole theme of them trying to like, you know, be together again.
Where, I don't want to give spoilers for people who are watching for the first time, but where does it really go off the rails, the show, like the mythology?
I would say the mythology after the first movie, like season 6 has some great standalone episodes, but then the mythology starts getting muddy. And then 7, 8, 9 is really muddy.
Yeah, I remember.
Because it was meant to end in the first movie is where it should have ended.
Yeah, it was really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, it's did you stick with it the whole
time? Oh, I did. I watched it until the bitter end. I don't remember much of it after. Like, it's funny like how like 9 years of a show just kind of goes and it's gone. Like, you know, it's like, cuz it's like move on to the next thing. So I remember moments, but I remember like liking elements of that first movie, and
I liked the first movie.
You know, I feel like I liked the second movie too.
I really want to watch it again. I have it.
I gotta watch it again. Like, I mean, I feel like, again, all these things are like, so like, they're kind of like preserved in amber in my mind. And as we're talking about it, I'm like, oh, right about that. Oh,
yeah. There's like a jigsaw puzzles and you're slowly putting it together as you remember it.
Well, like, as you just said that, I was like, oh, they continued doing the show after the first movie. I always remember it in my mind as being like, the show ended, then they did 2 movies.
No.
So, and then when you said it, I was like, oh, right. Again, it gets really off the rails because then they brought in extra people, like other, right?
They brought Robert Patrick and Annabeth Gish came in to replace them. Yeah.
Like, and then they hated each other.
Yeah.
And they weren't like,
And that, I remember it so weirdly, like, because in this one, when she scans that little thing, the implant and the machine goes nuts. I remember that happening way later, like season 4 or 5 or something, but it happened super early on.
It's funny, your brain just kind of categorizes everything like this. It's a lot of material too. But this is a show actually, like if they reboot it, they should bring it back. Well, but maybe I'd be pissing off the Monster of the Week fans. They should bring it back as like a limited series. They should do like 12 a year or like 10 a year, and maybe even do it on like cable or something like that. Like it would be, or do it on network, but like just do a abbreviated season. I think it would be way better.
I think it would be so good. I think it would be so good. I got this idea. I was reading the AV Club review of this. Mm-hmm. Zach Handlin does the reviews. Yes. And he said, Krycek, how cool would it have been if you didn't know Krycek was a bad guy until he attacks the cable operator guy?
Yeah.
That would have been so much more impact. Otherwise, you're kind of expecting it to happen anyway.
Well, I agree with that. I feel like that scene, and that scene is almost played in the way that it is. Like
it's going to be a shock.
Yeah.
Yeah, like it's a surprise. It's not. He straight up tries to kill Mulder there.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And in that scene, he goes from just like a stooge to like an insidious bad guy. He goes evil.
And then very quick, that scene was... Then he goes and meets Cigarette Smoking Man in the car, right?
Well, I think it's so funny because he's in the parking lot talking to somebody on the phone. And then you see Cigarette Smoking Man is just like in the same parking lot on the phone. Like they're just talking in the same room to each other on the phone. Also, I like the idea that he has his cell phone number. Yeah. What is it under? Probably like Becky or something,
and,
right?
And odd that Scully called Fox's home phone. Not his cell phone.
Which he has
important piece of information.
Yeah.
She waited until she got home and she's like, well, I'll go back from the super. I'll call him once I put my groceries away. I bought some ice cream. I want to make sure that that's in the freezer. I don't want to for the night. You know, it's like, I'm drawing a bath and I'll call him about this.
Then freezer. I'll call him. I mean, it's a big. That scene when you see him out the window looking at her at the end of episode, that's a fucking scary thing.
Oh, that was great.
Yeah, really. And have a guy be scary but also sympathetic. That's a tough thing. I liked, and then I also, Mulder is so fucking angry at him in that scene when he starts choking him.
Yeah.
Like, Mulder is really, David Duchovny is really good in these episodes at his descent. Like, when he's like choking him, and I've seen that thing before where like somebody gets violent and then later like the suspect is killed and gets blamed on him. And clearly, like, Krycek poisoned him or something, right?
Well, yeah, he had to have like injected something into him.
Right here. Krycek is such a motherfucker, but great, and then he disappears at the end. Oh, this is another thing that they have to do. It's when Krycek's talking to Cigarette Smoking Man, and he's like, why don't you just... He says, if Mulder's such a threat, why not eliminate him? And Cigarette Smoking Man says, kill Mulder and you risk turning one man's religion into a crusade.
Yeah.
I feel like clearly the best thing would be to just kill Mulder. But
they
can't do that.
But you see, that was the flawed... I agree. The flawed logic there is... The person who would have made that a crusade wouldn't have been Mitch Pleggy. It would have been Scully, but they've already taken care of Scully.
Yeah.
So you kill Mulder.
Who's it
going to
be?
Too.
The lone gunman? Who gives a shit about them anyway?
Yeah, no. No one would have said anything.
No one would have said anything. And Mitch Pileggi is like, this is early enough. He hasn't been around a long time.
Yeah.
Like, he's probably been working with them, honestly, like a month and a half or 2 months or something. Because he comes in at the end of season one.
And they could make it look like an accident.
Oh,
really
easily. It would clearly... Only the lone gunman would be onto it. Who cares?
And so Krycek essentially was like, oh, yeah, I'll just kill him without asking anybody.
Yeah. Krycek was like, I'm just...
check that plan out.
Like, just said, guys, I'm on this. Well, there's this thing here where like Krycek asks questions and he's like, I'm not going to tell you the answer. So at the end when Krycek disappears, part of you is like, oh, maybe they killed Krycek.
Yeah.
Like they're like, you know, they Lee Harvey Oswalded him now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought Mr. X's line, they only have one policy, deny everything. That's pretty cool. And you know how in the beginning...
He's awesome in this.
Yeah.
I love that guy.
Oh,
by the way,
great.
And that guy, again... In our X-Files homage, we brought that guy, Stephen Williams, into our show.
Oh, what was he
show.
Like? He's from 21 Jump Street, too.
Yes, and that's how I fell in love with him first.
Yeah.
He is, like, in no uncertain terms, amazing.
He's a nice guy?
Amazing. Like, we had him play this insane character who lived in Alaska and was the head of, like, he was, like, a Native American Alaskan. And he was wearing a fur jacket and he was improvising some of the funniest, craziest
really?
Stuff. And you just like in the same way that like Lance Reddick, who I love from The Wire and from
course.
Fringe, they play very stern characters on these hour long shows. And then when they get a chance to do comedy, you're like, holy shit, you guys are awesome because they bring that intensity to doing comedic stuff. It's amazing.
I mean, when those guys can be funny, like that's what Nick Offerman's appeal is.
Yeah.
You know, he's so intense and such a good dramatic actor. When you tweak that a little bit, so funny.
Oh my gosh. So Stephen Williams, amazing. And I love the way he was shot in this and the way he, like,
well, he's always awesome. In the shadows. Like,
so
it's so
great.
Cool. This
Do you
is
think
a
as an actor, is he bummed? Do you
what?
Think as an actor, he's like, I wish I got a little bit more of my face in this.
I'll put it on my reel, but the lighting was so X-Filesy. He's always meeting in like dark places. This is a kind of a bummer. So you know how the last character was named Deep Throat?
Uh-huh. And
they got that name from the message board. Started Cigarette Smoking Man, the message board started calling him that. Then the show did.
Oh, interesting.
Same with Deep Throat. A message board started calling him Deep Throat. And then
interesting.
On the show, because on the show they tried to call him Deep... I forget what it was, like Deep Connection or something like that.
Right.
Deep Background. Deep Background.
Right.
Stupid. You know what the message boards are calling Deep Throat, the new Mr. X now?
Oh, no. What?
Dark Throat.
I don't like that at all.
That's a real bummer.
That's
no good.
It's bad on... Yeah, it's bad.
Dark Throat? And everyone's calling him that. And then Dark Throats. I was like, why are they calling him Dark? Oh, no. That's not good.
When you said it the first time, I was like, oh, that's just like a weird... heightening, and then I'm like, then I didn't see the racial overtones to it, and then I'm like, oh,
that's certainly a big part of it.
Yeah. At first, I just thought it was like somebody just going like, oh, like Deep Throat, Dark Throat, like it just seemed like a thing, and then I was like, oh no, that's way worse.
No, and clearly the show never picks that up. They never call him Dark Throat, but
call him Dark Throat. His name is Mr. X. It's a pretty easy name. Message boards get on it. Just it's the
Mr.
same.
Mr. X is a great name.
Yeah.
He has to put an X on the window to talk to him. It makes sense. But yeah, and calling Krychek Rat Boy. Like, everybody just calls him Rat Boy.
Yeah.
Like, it just becomes the thing.
One of the cool things about Stephen Jackson, Stephen Williams, that I'll say is that when he was working with us, he was really excited because Skinner was on a show, the show I never watched.
Skinner's always working.
He's on that show, I think, called Supernatural or something. About these two guys. It's like kind of like an X-Files
brothers,
with like two bros. And I'm saying it. I've not seen it, but I know people like it.
People do like it.
They brought him on that show. Like, Skinner was like, bring on Mr. X. And then they like got to do scenes together because they liked each other from X-Files.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So
Mitch
really
Pileggi is fucking great.
So good.
And whenever I see him, he does this great thing where somehow he has a lot of integrity.
Yeah.
Even when he's scary, you're sort of on his side. So I think that scene with him and Mulder was so good because there's multiple scenes where he's like reading Mulder's report while he's just sitting there. My balls would shrink up into my body. So fucking horrifying. He's reading it right there. But when he says to Mulder, he says, I can't protect you anymore, Agent Mulder. That was so cool because you get the sense like he's on his side and, you know, his hands are tied, but he's... This episode, there's a lot of like alliances forming in this episode. So like Skinner, who's taking his orders from Cigarette Smoking Man the entire time, sort of explicitly allies himself with Mulder and the X-Files and Scully. And that's like a big sort of bond forming there. I thought that was a really cool scene when they do that.
I really, really enjoy that too. And I feel like that, like, these are the relationships that I remember from the show too, because he's an ally, but he can't really be an ally.
Right.
And you don't even know... I don't think that he's an ally because he believes him. He's an ally because he's like, I like that you're passionate and I'm supporting that. Like,
and he likes him more than he likes the fucking smoking guy.
Exactly. I think he's just like, if he's a gambling man, he's like, well, why not put some money down on that one too? Like, just in case that pays out, that would be a huge payday. But
he doesn't believe Mulder, but he likes him and he knows some shady shit's going on.
Because
in a previous episode... he finds out that the smoking man had been tapping Mulder's phone, and he's like, he doesn't say get the fuck out of my office, but he basically does. But I think that scene was really good, and I thought the scene with Mulder and Scully's mom at the end was pretty cool too, where he like gives her the locket and she says, he says, if she was such a skeptic, why did she wear that? And that's the thing that sort of Scully's like religion thing and her belief thing is a major sort of theme of the X-Files that continues on through the rest of the series. And when she says, when you find her, you give it to her. And then it's him staring at the sky at the end. Like, that's a pretty fucking great ending. Scully's gone.
It's so great. And that's like when I finished watching, I was like, ooh, want to watch more now? You know, it's like, it's great. It's, you know, it brings me back to that time when you would watch TV. I mean, I do it all the time, but it's like that wait, in between the weeks.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the break of the last Breaking Bads and you know.
Yeah, that's what I don't. I mean, so people started watching this show again, a lot of people, because of this podcast. And then they tweeted me like, I'm on season 4. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
Don't do that. It's way more fun to like watch, you know. I mean, I've been watching a ton, but. It's crazy how we're used to like
watch them like two at a time. Like, just watch them like you have a little restraint. Enjoy them two at a time.
But that last scene, I thought that's a big step, Mulder connecting with her family, connecting with her mom, because Mulder feels like, you know, he feels like your kid at school who's no good with parents, yeah. You know? Like, I love Fox, or, you know, I love Barry, but I'm not going to bring him to see my mom. He's no good. That's not what Barry is.
You can't bring, yeah.
That's not his vibe. That's not his vibe. But I thought, the fact that he's making an effort to do that, he contacts her mom. Speaks a lot and really like takes their relationship.
Yeah,
up a
which
notch.
I thought was, you know, which speaks to my belief that they had a really great dinner one time.
Yeah. Yeah, you've got a couple great theories. Aliens as drug for Mulder, and then also the missing dinner that they had. You should write fan fiction when it's them like getting.
I'm going to have a great, like, my dinner with Andre fan fiction about X-Files. Is it hard on this podcast to. Because I think one of the fun things about all these shows. Is watching and making assumptions about where it goes.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think Lost was very exciting throughout because you're like, well, I think it's this. Well,
yeah.
I think it's going to end like this. But now to know the end or to know where it's going, how does it play out?
It's tough. I have to be a little careful. I don't talk about spoilers.
Sure.
I think it, because I read these message boards and stuff.
Yeah.
And that's all those people are doing. So in a way, it's not easy, but it does make it easier to put yourself in the position of someone who hasn't seen the rest of it.
Right.
And to, like, sort of have the conversations with yourself that you would have if you hadn't actually seen it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like the only thing that...
Because you know what... You know, you and I know what happened to Scully up there. But, you know, these people at the message boards are talking about... So here, actually, let's... Should we go to the message board? Here, I'll just say real quick what the creators thought of it. They all really liked it. You know, Chris Carter was his first time directing it. David Duchovny said Chris came in meticulously prepared, which is his nature. I think his first episode was great. In the scene where Scully buys at the supermarket, she buys pickles and ice cream, which is a nod to her pregnancy.
Oh, nice.
And then I kind of wanted to look up, like, what are the other shows that are big at this time?
Yeah.
So this show is going up against Step by Step and Hanging with Mr. Cooper.
I remember Hanging with Mr. Cooper on a Friday night.
Yeah.
This is a Friday night show, right?
Yeah, this is a Friday night show at this time it is. And here are the top 10 shows at that time.
All right.
That of the year are Seinfeld, ER, Home Improvement, Grace Under Fire.
Right.
Monday Night Football, 60 Minutes, NYPD Blue, Murder, She Wrote, which in my head is so much older than this.
Yeah, me too, yeah.
Friends and Roseanne.
By the way, Friends really on the bottom of that list,
yeah.
Which probably moved way to the top, you know, too. That's a good lineup of TV right there.
Yeah, no, those are like all shows that kind of stuck around. And
are
also
these like,
Grace
and am I
the
looking
fire.
At this right? Like, these are the 19 million people watch Seinfeld? Is that right? Wow.
Yeah, 19 million people watched it on average.
Just to give you a comparison of that, like most shows now, like a million people watch.
Oh, yeah. Breaking Bad was around a million.
Yeah. Mad Men is about a million or, you know.
Yeah.
But I mean, even network shows, like Parks and Rec is like a 1.4 or 1.6. It's like, that's not.
That's like. One and a half million, two million people.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like so many choices.
Yeah, so many choices.
Big Bang Theory is the only one that I think that still gets like 12 million viewers or
does
something.
Does it get that
I think
many?
So they're getting like $1 million, over $1 million
they're
an episode.
They're going to make so much money.
They're not even going to work. It's been delayed now.
Oh, has it?
To get more money.
Dude, I was at...
And they, by the way, they should get as much as humanly possible.
Oh, people are
the only successful show on television.
People
comedy.
Are making tons of money. They should be making a lot of money.
Yeah.
I mean, that is crazy that they're going to make a million. But I saw like Johnny...
Friends did it.
Yeah, Friends did it and Seinfeld did it before that. What's his name? Johnny, the main guy? Johnny Galecki?
Yeah.
I saw him at a grocery store and I like kind of was like, he has so much money. And I just kind of went down this weird like spiral in my own head about like how crazy successful this guy
well,
is.
Well, you have to think like, when you are signing up for a Chuck Lorre show, if you get it, you're like, oh, I won the lottery. Because all those shows exist forever. You know, they're not like...
Oh, they're huge hits.
They're like 2.5 Men? Giant.
Giant. And he had the two biggest comedies on the air for a long time.
Yeah.
2.5 Men and Big Bang Theory.
What are the two biggest ones now? What, Broke Girls, maybe?
I mean, it's Big Bang, and then I don't know what it is.
I have a feeling it might still be 2.5 Men, if not Broke Girls, because I feel like that would be the...
All shows with numbers in the title. Two. Yeah. So a lot of people, this is interesting, a lot of people are talking about Mulder's act. So I went to the message boards.
Yeah.
This is from that week.
Got
what
it.
Happened was, for whatever reason, these episodes are October 14th and 21st.
Mm.
The message boards from like September 18th to October 18th are blank. I don't know why. Okay. And I found some messages of people going, where did all the messages go?
Okay.
So I have this from 18th on. It's a conspiracy. It's something. People are saying, talking about Mulder's acting, and people are defending him. Like, I get so tired of people saying he's wooden. He's astonishing. He can convey the most incredible emotion with such subtlety. I couldn't believe it when I read a message when someone was complaining, all caps, about how they focused in on Dee Dee's face too much. Why'd they have to keep circling the camera around him like that?
That's
your thing. Because he is acting, all caps, 4 exclamation points. What are you looking for? Someone who went to William Shatner's school of overacting? Shots fired. And then people responded that they really did like it. Many actors constantly get overlooked because they give subtle, relaxed performances. Everyone seems to be going for scenery chewers, they said. De Niro got nominated for Awakenings and not Williams. Robin Williams gave the performance of his life in that movie. He has been nominated for other... So they're saying, you know, flashy performances more. Yeah.
But I don't think that... Well, I felt like he was, you know, as a man whose best friend has been kidnapped and potentially killed. And I feel like he did a great job.
I thought he was great in it.
Yeah.
It's a great... also, the Rock and Jock basketball game happened this week.
Oh, my gosh.
Week.
Love that.
Do you know what that is?
Oh, my God. Yeah. It was the best thing that MTV ever did.
It's on MTV?
Did. Yeah. So they would have like... So they'd have like celebrities mixed in. It was just like fun intramural basketball. But you would have a court... And the baseball one was really fun too. But you'd have a court where if you stood in one spot and you made a basket there, it was like worth like 100 points. And so it was like a really fun, bizarre.
Like video gamey a little bit.
Yeah. So it was a very, like, you know, the baseball one was like, it was like an extreme weird thing of, you know, so like Snoop Dogg would be playing and it was like, you know, whoever, you know, Muggsy Bogues, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, like, so it was like it was a real mix. It was so much fun. Rock and Jock.
So they talked about Rock and Jock. They said, during the few minutes of time DD got, he played point guard and handled the ball often. He made several difficult bounce passes in traffic that resulted in good shot opportunities for his team. He is short and was on the court with NBA stars, not just players, stars. And all his decisions seemed correct to me.
I will say this to you. Like, again, you and I have been lucky enough to do some things. You get nervous before you do a talk show, or you get nervous before you have to present an award or anything like that.
Yeah.
How nervous would you be if you have to play basketball on TV and you're an actor? Like, that, to me, is like just the fact that he subjected himself to that.
Oh, yeah. He loves basketball. He's a big basketball fan.
I feel like everybody in those 90s, like ER, they always playing basketball.
Oh, yeah. George Clooney was always playing basketball. That's right. That's exactly right. I'd have to say he did a competent job as point guard while in the game. Another item of note. This is an item of note, Paul. He has muscle definition in his arms and legs.
Ooh.
That's the point of note.
The point of note, muscle definition. All right, so he's not a flabby guy.
No, he's like a...
You mean the guy who was in Speedo in this episode was not a flabby guy?
Turns out he's in good shape.
Yeah.
They talk about his portable phone. I haven't seen any topics about Mulder and his portable phone. I guess it's another way. It's cell phones are new enough that people are a little like confused by them at this point, apparently.
So it's sort of like for... Like when you had one in your car or something like that.
Yeah. I guess it's another way for him and Scully to communicate and keep more above the chest shots of Scully. When does he charge it? How does everyone seem to know his number? What are you talking about?
Well, that's pretty amazing.
I don't know how cell phones work?
When does he charge it?
Yeah.
That's pretty great. Well, look, but you can't make fun of tech people who have, you know, this may be...
Oh, yeah. 94. Yeah, it's starting.
Yeah.
I know this is a very trivial matter, but what kind of wristwatch was Mulder wearing? You could see it plainly, but I want to know what make, brand, etc. Any of you insiders able to tell me? This is a great one. Next one. Multiple. Does anyone have Chris Carter's email address? So, multiple people are asking for Chris Carter's email address. There's one guy who claims he has it, but I couldn't find the post where he posted it. So, he posted Chris Carter's email address, and then I couldn't find it.
That's amazing and terrible. Why would that guy post this?
Yeah, all these guys have pitches, is what it is. They really do.
Because, you know, Star Trek made a very strong, case for, a lot of Next Generation. You could just, pitch an idea, and then you're like, oh yeah, you wrote that episode.
Oh, is that what it was? Yes. That's why these people are all pitching ideas.
Yeah, so it was like Star Trek was always like, we'll just take the best idea, and then we'll shape it. Like
We'll write it. Yeah.
Yeah, so I feel like it was like you could give them your script, then they would just kind of polish it. But a lot of writers did that, from what I understood.
That's impressive. That's why there's a whole, this alt TV X-Files creative, and that's people just writing stories and pitching ideas. A lot of people are talking about Krycek. What happened to him? They said the cigarette smoking man and his cronies may have disposed of Krycek, considered that Krycek was getting a little too demanding and wanting to know what was going on with Scully. And then they said the other possibility is that Rat Boy had a conscience bout. He appeared to want Mulder to make it to the top of the mountain despite almost killing him. He seemed relieved when FM made it, and he seemed upset when he did not know what happened to Scully. My theory is that either he went off on his own to find her or found someone else to befriend and do that. Basically, people are, you know, a lot of people are talking about what happened to him. And then the people are talking about, you know, Skinner. They're saying that Scully's gone, but he's got another partner now. Mulder's got Skinner now. People really hated Rat Boy. They said he deserved to drown in his own styling gel. Very harsh.
I like that. Very harsh.
Very harsh.
This is before criticism got to be really, like, internet criticism before it got to be very snarky. Like, I feel like it's still kind of fun.
Styling gel. Yeah, it's fun. It's like a kid would come up with
this. Yeah, exactly. I prefer this. It's
They're talking about him still. When Mulder told Skinner and company that he suspected Dwayne Barry had been poisoned, that the military was covering it up, cigarette smoking man was in the room, which is right. I think this tipped him off to the fact that Mulder didn't trust Rat Boy. In fact, that he even suspected him of killing Dwayne, and therefore cigarette smoking man knew it was time to have Krycek disappear. And the people are saying possibly, but disappear doesn't necessarily equal murdered and buried. Krycek's a fairly talented resource. Why throw him away when you can just reassign him? So I think they've connected to this character enough that they're wondering where he's
right.
Going.
They want him. Like, it's like that thing, like the character that you love to hate. Like they want him to be around. They don't want him off the show. It's not like he's a bad. It's not like Nikki and Paolo on Lost, where people are like, we hate
you. Fuck you. Go get away. Never see you again.
Yeah.
Scully. A lot of people are guessing. This is a crazy one. If Dana, the people are saying that she might actually be Mulder's long lost sister.
I remember having that theory.
Oh, you remember having that theory?
Yes. I mean, I felt like that was a, like, I think that people, I don't know, I felt like that was a theory at one point. When you said that, I'm like, oh, I remember thinking that too. Like, because you were trying to figure out a connection or something.
Yeah, they're saying there are plenty of instances to possibly suggest that she's the sister. Scully is an unusual mark on her body. Scully is abducted by aliens. Scully and Mulder feel drawn to one another, yet romance is out because that would mean incest. I don't know. And then people are saying that's a good theory. Yeah, it's a decent theory that Scully is in the hands of aliens who are impregnating her because you see her belly.
Right, yeah.
So, and then people are saying, well, no, cigarette smoking man has made it clear that his group has her. Chris Carter has made it clear that Scully will not be pregnant. I thought it was rather obvious that the belly scene was merely Mulder's imagination / worst nightmare. People are like, what if the cigarette smoking man is an alien? That's a crazy theory. They're all talking about whether humans have her, the dark government,
right,
or whether it's aliens.
I got to watch now to see what happens because I forgot who had her.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty interesting stuff. The final scene was very touching, and it looks like Mulder finally caught Rat Boy, and the X-Files are open again. Yay! Oh, now let's go get Scully, fellow GATBers. Do you know what GATB is?
No, tell me what it is.
There's also a DDEB. It's a DDEB is David Duchovny Estrogen Brigade.
Oh,
and,
my God.
And GATB is Gillian Anderson Testosterone Brigade. And someone has made ID cards of them.
That's
and you can
amazing.
Go to FTP site and download it and print it out.
I love
like
that.
Like membership cards. Yeah. So now people are talking, is this real? All the stuff that we're shown, that we're seeing is happening to Scully, if it's Mulder's vision. He had no reason to see her pregnant unless it's a frequent result of alien abductions. I'm aware that it had been alleged, but does Mulder really need to be this afraid of it? Basically, they're saying, like, if she looks pregnant, why would he imagine that? So they thought that that was maybe a real thing. Then people are saying, I think it was Mulder's vision. That would explain why the tech looked very human. I think he had listened to so many stories about alien impregnating humans that this was probably one of the first images that popped into his head.
Well, I would also say that it's a bad imagination if it's his imagination, because what kind of impregnation would just be like pulling the belly up like almost like a bouncy ball? Like, it was really a bizarre, like it was like a little like... like just like it was like really just sucking the belly up like a vacuum cleaner is making it big. And then,
yeah, it's weird. It's no good.
The much cleaner way to impregnate somebody. Probably not for Fox Television in 94.
No. They're talking about Skinner and Mulder. Skinner siding with Mulder and reopening the X-Files because it's what they're most afraid of. They got that right. I'm still not convinced that Skinner really believes in Mulder's work. That's what you're saying. But he is convinced that there are forces at work that are not in the best interest of the American government. And people, sicking Mulder on them is the only tool he has at hand. People are saying, I love this theory. I think Skinner thinks that Mulder is a total weirdo, but that he does not like dishonesty and people not telling him what is going on. Opening the X-Files means that he will have to still deal with Mulder's weirdness, but he knows where Mulder is coming from. He doesn't feel the same way about the higher-ups. So
there you go.
Yeah,
that's a very good, astute point.
Yeah, the brigades, the DEB and GATB, apparently they had a fight because after... Mulder was in the red Speedo. The David Duchovny people were like, oh yeah, ours is winning because we got to see him in the Speedo. And then now people are excited about...
The belly.
They're showing... It was infinitely more impressive for GA to show tummy than DD running around showing his religion, which I guess...
Well, they always say that you can tell somebody's
People are saying Chris Carter is definitely in this news group and is reading the previous thread because there's a thread that says, what do you guys think of the show? People are like, he may very well be the dude who started the previous thread. Think about it. If you wrote a show, wouldn't you want to know how the viewers felt, what they wanted more of, what they wanted less of, etc.? And it's true. They were reading it because in the last season, this is something that people are talking about that ended up on the show. So they are reading it.
Yeah.
Oh, and I'll end on this. Jillian had her baby. Someone said, just after Piper was born, that's Piper,
the
baby, I, along with half the planet, I'm sure, picked out a card and sent it to Jillian.
Oh, not half the planet.
If you're curious, I would not use a pre-printed card. I found one with a mama otter and a baby on her belly and quoted something from The Secret Garden in it. While I was in the store, I suddenly thought, what is anyone doing for David? Having two step siblings born 4 years apart, I know what the jealousy factor can do to a person.
Oh my God.
I picked out another card for himself, which is David.
Yeah.
Wrote something appropriately heartfelt and sent them both off. Which reminds me, those cards went out about a month ago and I haven't yet heard anything.
Oh, really? Surprise.
Does anyone know how good these folks are at responding?
Oh my God. Imagine if Jillian Anderson wrote back cards to everybody.
Oh God. But there's a lot of like, this is the early days of the internet, so people are really feeling like they can connect with these people.
Oh my God. That's amazing. That's an amazing one.
Yeah.
Wow.
Dude, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me talk about X-Files. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Do you want to plug anything?
Your
Twitter and your shows?
I'll be on The Meltdown with Kumail and Jonah.
Yeah.
And then the league starts up September 3rd, 10 p.m. On FXX. And you can listen to my podcast, How Did This Get Made? This show is actually, would it be weird? Because this show kind of inspired me to do in my mind, I haven't said it out loud, but I can say it to you. You can say it, don't do it. But I would like to do this for Buffy.
Yeah, I never really watched Buffy that much. See, I don't know Buffy. I
was
totally
a big Buffy fan, and I was like, oh, it'll be fun to talk to people about Buffy.
Yeah.
That's a huge-ass commitment, too, to watch a million episodes of these shows.
No, but it's fun. Like, I realize I'm having a great time watching it, and even, like, the bad episodes, like, I skipped some in episode one, in season one. I still like watching even the bad ones.
Would you ever do it for Star Trek?
I love the next gen. I like the original one. Yeah.
That would be interesting too.
Yeah.
Those are monsters.
Yeah. Those are, I mean, the original series is only three seasons, but the new one is like nine.
Well, yeah. Like, I feel like, if you did Next Generation, I was a big Deep Space Nine fan. I would get into the last two seasons of Deep Space Nine.
Oh, really? I never.
Oh, when the war started coming and Worf was on there, forget about it.
So you're like deep into these sci-fi shows, huh?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm all that. 100%.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. All right, dude. Thanks for coming. hey, so I'm glad you guys listened to that episode. Paul Scheer is absolutely fantastic, and I'm going to have him back on. Please go to feralaudio.com and donate to this podcast if you can. Dustin, who started Feral Audio and works so hard on this podcast and many others, donating is a way to sort of help him out, because he really, really pours a lot of time into this thing. Follow me at X-Files Files or at Kumail. And again, please watch The Meltdown with Jonah and Kumail. Kind of need to convince Comedy Central to do another season, because we have great ideas from this season. So, you know, if you guys watch it, we'll be able to do that. And that's obviously very, very exciting. Next week, I'm talking about 3 and 1 Breath. With Rhea Butcher, who was on recently, and everyone had loved her so much. I was like, yep, got to have her back on. Email me at thexfilesfiles@gmail.com, and thanks so much for listening.
Hey, I'm Ben.
Jeff. There.
I'm Ben.
I'm Jeff.
Ben,
just do it.
I'm sorry. Hey, this is Ben, Jeff, and Thayer, and we host a podcast called Convince Me, where we have guests on to try to convince us to get on board with their unique obsessions. Check out our podcast. It's called Convince Me.
I'm Jeff.